Welcome to the Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice podcast. Our goal is to prioritize prevention conversations that matter. Our topic for today is building relationships with elected officials to champion prevention with special guests, Dontavious Gerrels and Maggie Luteris. Now here's our host, Holly Raffel.
Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of season 3 on Prioritizing Prevention, Translating Science to Practice. This podcast is hosted by the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion. My name is Holly Raffel, and I have the privilege of serving as the faculty director of the center. Today, we're exploring how to effectively share your prevention message by engaging with elected officials. Whether it's preventing substance use, creating environments where individuals, families, and communities can thrive, or supporting the continuum of care through treatment and recovery efforts, policy is foundational to our work in prevention. We are privileged to be joined by a panel of distinguished guests today who will lend their expertise and experience to this discussion. I'm honored to introduce the Ohio House Representative and Assistant Minority Leader, Dontavious Gerrels, who has represented District 1, including parts of Columbus and Bexley in Franklin County since 2020. After graduating, Dontavious embarked on a journey in public service as an Ohio Legislative Service Commission Fellow during the 129th General Assembly. His impactful contributions included drafting, where he championed Medicaid expansion and health equity initiatives, fostering community engagement across diverse populations to address health disparities. And personally, I have had the pleasure of working alongside Representative Gerrels on several behavioral health initiatives over the year, and I'm grateful that our paths are crossing again. Welcome, Representative Gerrels, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule, especially during this busy time of year when the state budget is a priority to be with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm also pleased to welcome Maggie Luteris to our show today. Maggie is currently the Advocacy and Public Policy Coordinator at Prevention Action Alliance. Prior to joining PAA, Maggie served Ohio for years as a legislative and senior legislative aide in both the Ohio House of Representatives and the Ohio Senate. After serving in the General Assembly, Maggie worked at the Pickaway Addiction Action Council as program director for their Drug-Free Communities Grant. Welcome, Maggie, and thank you for joining us today to share your dual perspective as legislative aide and prevention champion with our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me.
So on our podcast, we believe that authentic connection is key, and that's why we love to start by getting to know our guests on a more personal level. This is the time where we invite guests to share with us something that brings joy to their work or a challenge they've overcome that they're proud of. And to add a touch of fun, we often ask guests to share a quirky or unexpected fact that our listeners might find interesting. Representative Gerrels, we know you're deeply involved with the state budget process right now, but what does a typical day look like for you when the legislature is in full swing?
Well, again, thank you so much for having me. This budget season has been nothing like any other I've been through. I've been through two other budgets, and this one it definitely is the most expedited, as they say. But I'm really excited to see you all and be on this podcast with you. And, you know, the typical day of a state representative, every day is different. I might walk into office and I have literally, as we've done in the budget season, 15-minute meetings with agency partners and individuals who want to receive some funding from the budget or have a program that they want to share with me, or I might go on a tour, or I might end up, you know, in, for example, in committee. I have four committees, for example. So, you know, every day is different. There are days where I'm talking to constituents, talking about their concerns and how do I connect them with local or county officials to help them deal with their issues. Or I'm planning a big event in the community where I am providing resources to my constituents. And so really every day is different. That's why I love my job, because I get to really mold my office into what I believe is the, you know, the best reflection of the needs of my constituents and really help them be their best selves. And so something quirky, I think, you know, obviously I love to dance. I don't know if that's quirky or not, but I'm a big dancer, and I feel like that's my secret power, if you will. And it allows me to just get away from all the day-to-day work that I do and just kind of be free. And so, yeah, the day in the life of a state representative literally is different every single day. And you work Monday through Sunday in some cases, and because the work doesn't stop on weekends and people still need you. And so how I try to get away is dancing, and sharing some good experiences with some good friends.
Absolutely. It sounds like there's a lot of dance involved in your work life, and the fact that you're able to transition and include dance in, you know, the creative aspect of it in your personal life is really interesting to me. So thanks for sharing that quirky aspect.
Thank you.
Maggie, you've seen the legislative process from both sides as a legislative aide and now as an advocacy coordinator. Can you give us a glimpse into the typical day of your current role?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, thank you so much for having me. I do want to say, you know, they're two very different roles. And it's interesting to have both perspectives of seeing, you know, what it is on the inside and outside. I know Representative Gerald kind of has a different experience of going from inside, outside, and back inside again. But, you know, typically what I do at PAA is one of the first things I always do is I read the news, you know, what's going on in the state, what's going on Twitter, even, you know, those are great opportunities just to kind of catch up on what's going on in Ohio, as well as what are the priorities that legislators are really kind of trying to key in on. And then, you know, with that, you know, you want to follow up on any sort of pending legislation. If there is an issue that you are wanting that's currently not legislation, trying to figure out which legislator would be the champion for that. You know, there are different members who have different priorities. And so, you know, keeping up with them, you know, reading bios. Again, Twitter is great to just kind of catch up on priorities. As well as my job is also not only to work with the legislator, but to educate preventionists on what is going on. And so providing, you know, a newsletter and webinars and helping assist and, you know, advocacy days. I think that's a huge part of my role as well. And so every day, just like the legislature is different, and as nonprofit people, we always wear multiple different hats. And so being able to, you know, adjust and try to communicate what's going on is so important and so valuable. That's what day-to-day looks like.
Again, sounding so busy, especially when there's so many moving parts to policy work in the legislature. Is there anything you do in your free time that gives you joy?
I love my dog. He expects so much joy. So if you ever want to connect with me, just show me a dog picture. I'm going to love you forever. Again, as prevention specialists, we always talk about, you know, taking care of yourself. I love yoga. I currently have a yoga session later today. I probably do it about 5 times a week. And so that's kind of my way of decompressing, just kind of, you know, finding myself. So that's something I do. I guess that's my little quirky thing I do.
What's your dog's name?
Oh, his name's Woodrow.
Very, you know, appropriate, you know, having that political name as well. So bringing us to our topic today, what we hear from folks is a sense of hesitation when reaching out to elected officials. And that seems to be something that many folks in prevention share. We've also heard others tell us that when they take the time to prepare their message and gather supportive information, they feel better about speaking to all the ways in which prevention initiatives can be adapted to meet the needs of their community and interests to their decision makers. Representative Gerald, how do you recommend individuals prepare to make meaningful connections with an elected official or the aides that support their elected official?
Well, first off, I want to say that's a great question. And I always tell constituents when they meet with me to never be scared of us. I think oftentimes there's this just inherent fear of engagement with elected officials across all spectrums, whether city council, state representatives, your congressional members. And I tell every person that I come in contact with, I work for you. And so there's nothing to be scared of. In fact, I should be scared of you because you vote for me. And I think that has to be the baseline and normalization of how we interact with with constituents. They have to believe that there is, they have the ability to hold me accountable. And I'm really big on that. And so I think starting there helps you really get to a place where you can talk to an elected official about anything that you're dealing with in your day-to-day life. And so You know, so let's say, you know, you're engaging with me. I'm going to use myself as an example. You come to me and you have a concern. I think the biggest thing is just to be honest, to be truthful, right? Be authentic, be vulnerable. I think oftentimes what happens is people think that we have to just speak with kind of this policy mindset. And no, we all don't have the answers. We're trying to work on answers together. And so my ask of constituents, of people who are looking to advocate in the state house or any other governmental center, is really just to be vulnerable and speak their truth and speak about the realities that their families are dealing with, navigating that issue. And what you hope your elected officials can do on their behalf to help their families or that community get the solutions that they rightfully deserve. And so, you know, one, just to recap, don't be afraid of us. Hold us accountable. Two, be very vulnerable and intentional about connecting with us. And I think the third piece is everything's about relationships. And so, you know, one of the things that I say as a person who's been in the policy space, worked in the state house, now lead in the state house, I'm really big on relationship building, because when you really break down everything that I do in the legislature, it's about maintaining, elevating, and empowering relationships so that when you come to me with an ask or a request, we already have a relationship that we can move forward from. This is not the first time you met with me. And so I always recommend people meeting with their elected officials, going to their community meetings, volunteering with them if they're in the community doing work, right? Engaging and building a relationship. So when something does occur, you have a relationship to move from and not start from that point building one.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Representative Geralds, for expressing that people-centered approach to leadership. I think that'll help our listeners really understand that the barriers that they have when speaking to elected officials are often barriers that are in their own minds. And I think that's a good reminder that elected officials are there to serve the public. Maggie, you've served as an aide to multiple legislators, both in the Ohio House and Senate. Can you please explain what that role actually is and how aides often act as the primary point of contact for elected officials?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And so typically an aide does a lot of scheduling, communicating with constituents, assessing and preparing those legislative materials such as bills, amendments, speeches, press releases. And really, because the legislator is not really going to be that person who's going to be answering the phone when you call in the office, they are their point of contact. And so they are really the liaison when it comes to various stakeholders, including constituents, other government offices, and advocacy groups. And so they are really responsible for ensuring the legislators' priorities are effectively communicated, as well as receiving that information and relaying it to the legislator. And so one thing I really love that Representative Geralds said is kind of that community focus and not being scared of your legislator. I was at a National Council of State Legislators conference a few years ago, and one of them was talking about how people were so scared of them that they were sitting on their couch. This legislator was from Alaska, and he was just eating a bowl of chili just to kind of relax people that, you know, they are people too. And so, you know, they have concerns too. And the huge part about constituents and, you know, organizations such as prevention coalitions, any sort of prevention specialists, is legislators know a mile wide but an inch deep. And so the big ask is to be that inch wide but that mile deep of information. That's going to be so helpful. You know, you are the experts. You have stories to tell. There is data that is so localized in your communities that you can really express what's going on and have that story to tell. I think that's huge. And so just really focusing on, you know, your ask and building that rapport, as well as understanding the schedule. I know today Representative Geralds is very, very busy, and the fact that he took the time just to sit with us is huge, and, you know, to respect that. But knowing the timeline of certain things and really kind of relaying your ask to meet those timelines, but also building that rapport so that it's not, who are you? You're trying to establish yourself. You can get to what you want. And I think Representative Geralds did a great job explaining that.
Thank you so much, Maggie. We could talk all day about the most effective strategies to build relationships with elected officials and their team, but let's take the conversation a step further to becoming recognized as a resource for elected officials and their teams. Representative Jarosz, from your perspective, are there particular approaches to sharing information that you find especially valuable when constituents reach out? Because constituents can be just as great as a resource to you as you are to them.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, one of the things that I think about all the time and work with my constituents on is asking them to bring ideas to me as a legislator to move into policy. So, for example, one bill that we did recently get into law was my Pay Stub Protection Act. And essentially, Ohio at the time was one of only six states left in the country that did not require employers to give pay stubs to workers. And what happened was we had a constituent who had to literally sue their the company they worked for their pay stubs. And they came to us and they were like, this is not fair. Why did I have to spend money to get something that I felt should rightfully be mine in the first place? And out of that, we created the Pay Stub Protection Act so that no other constituent has to go through what she went through. And why is that important? Because at the end of the day, as a state legislator, a lot of the things that I do is about changing state law and really addressing the material conditions of people in the state. And every bill that I pass doesn't just impact my district, it impacts the entire state of Ohio. And so how do I make sure, I want constituents to know when they bring concerns to us, right, that we are fighting on their behalf to create solutions to those problems like the Pay Stub Protection Act did for that constituent and many, many, many more who were unfortunately also in those that same situation. And so to directly answer your question, you know, you talking and bringing up issues that are impacting you and your community and saying that that's, one of the things I say is, if you get a legislator to say that's not right, they're going to work on a bill. Yeah, because most of the bills that I've literally introduced have come from constituents. And I got so mad at the fact that this constituent had to deal with this issue. And I said, that's not right. I then work with the Legislative Service Commission. I work with grassroots organizations to frame out a bill to address that issue. Because if that member, that constituent is dealing with it, you know that I'm, you know, we have millions of people across Ohio that are also dealing with or could be potentially dealing with the same issues. And so so I'm really big on, again, being vulnerable, talking about what's going on in your community, and then allowing the member, in my case, the state representative, really say to themselves, like, I want to work with you to figure out how we can get a solution, and then we'll work together to make that happen.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that, and especially sharing it in a story, because we know that that is something that is really helpful in providing background for people to understand the point that you're trying to bring up. And to pick up on that line of storytelling, Maggie, I'm curious, as we share our prevention story, what are some ways that preventionists can demonstrate their credibility to our legislators and their aides when we are advocating or championing prevention?
Absolutely. No, that's a great question. I think ways that prevention specialists can provide that credibility is first actually using credible data. You know, we have some data that's coming out there that, you know, that can be debunked and stuff. And so using reliable sources, as well as if you are using your own local data, have the validity of where that data is coming from. Is it your local Department of Health? Is it, you know, a hospital? Is it, you know, those, I know for DFC grantees, they have to have, you know, those five questions for the DFC. Where is that coming from? Is it, where's the validity of that? And so if you can prove that, I think that's huge. But beyond also just verifying data, I think having the partnerships and coming from a coalition standpoint, we have to have those 12 sectors. And, you know, if we're saying this is happening and they can verify it, back you up, that is huge. You're hearing two different voices, as well as if you can get multiple data points. So I know that a coalition in Tennessee, they had data on students who were using cannabis. And so they had this point, and there was a school nurse who's like, ah, no, that's not true. And then they did a drug test in that school, and they had maybe 2 points percentage difference on that data that they received from that survey to what was actually being used and what students were actually testing positive for cannabis in their system. So having that to also validate, hey, this is what the data is saying, here's what's actually happening in real life, is huge. But, you know, relying on those partnerships And especially if that partnership has a relationship with your representative, your senator, your elected official, that can also lead the way of, hey, I trust them, you should trust them too. And so building those capacities, building those relationships, not even just with your elected official, but outside of the office to those relationships as well, I think is extremely important and very valuable.
Thank you so much. And I have a follow-up question. This could be for either of you. When we were preparing for the podcast, we heard, one of our stakeholders say, I was meeting with my legislator and they said something that wasn't actually factual. And Maggie, you brought up the point that oftentimes legislators have kind of that mile wide, but an inch deep. So there may be some misconceptions out there. But the person said, should I have corrected the representative or should I have just let it go? What would be the best way to handle that situation? So I'll just kind of, throw that up as a softball for either one of you to answer.
Well, that's a softball. If that's that's a big softball. Let me say this. Legislators are not perfect. They're not. They get wrong data. They emotionalize, right? They're hearing from a constituent and they believe that constituent's viewpoint is the only viewpoint. And the truth is this, so many people across Ohio that may have differing perspectives. And so it's really important that we as legislators listen to a wide variety of perspective and voices to have a better understanding of how policy will impact people across the system. But I think to answer your question about, let's say I said something wrong in a meeting. I always am big on you correcting me right there, but doing it in a respectful way, right? So we had to play this out. I'm saying something and you say, hey, Representative, I want to say thank you so much for bringing that up. But I want to make sure that you are aware that, that data actually says X, Y, and Z. And then provide the information to the member so that they can see it, read it, digest it themselves. That it's not just your voice saying it, that they can actually look at data. And they still may say, I think they're incorrect, right? Because we could be a prideful bunch, unfortunately, at times. But the truth is, you are going to do your job by inserting yourself, providing the correct information, and letting that legislator come to their own conclusion on what that data says to them. There may be members who are going to readily say, I appreciate you bring this up. And there may be members who take the information and you never hear from them. But yet they may change their perspective, their mindset because of the information you provided. And so again, you have to not be afraid, right? You cannot be afraid when you engage us, because at the end of the day, the decisions that we're making are literally life and death for families. And so that information is going to change the mindset of a person, of a legislator, and could very well change how that bill is framed or how we talk about that issue. Do it, because you're saving so many lives when you're inserting yourself with correct information that can change the environment.
I would say that everything Representative Gerald said was absolutely spot on. You don't want to create legislation in a silo. You don't want to just get information from one source. And so, especially with some of the prevention specialist issues that are in the State House are hot topics. They're getting press across the state, sometimes even the country. And you're going to find that there are going to be several different interested parties, several different industries that are going to be interested in that same issue. And they're going to be pushing data and information that's going to contradict each other. And so I think, again, if the legislator says something that, is incorrect, having that polite response, having that professional response, you don't want to get aggressive. Because once you get aggressive, everybody shuts down. If somebody gets aggressive with me, I'm like, okay, I'm focused on what you're doing to me and how I'm emotionally feeling rather than what you're saying. And so that's, I think, is something you also need to focus on. And again, at the end of the day, the legislator is going to make their decision on all the information that's given to them. And if you can provide, the best response to that and to have that backup, if you are meeting with them, understanding that if this is a controversial issue, having those, you know, prepared for, hey, I'm hearing this, you know, well, yes, you are hearing this, but this is actually what's happening, so that you are ready to go for that meeting and for that conversation.
Well, thank you both. So far today, we've touched on how to build a relationship with elected officials and how preventionists can position themselves and their organizations to serve as resources to legislators and their aides. So I want to talk a little bit about maintaining those relationships and the trust that people put so much effort into establishing. Maggie, I suspect there's an art to respecting the time constraints of the office while maintaining the connection with staffers. Could you give an example or perhaps share a couple of things aides appreciate hearing about from a constituent in between those intentional conversations and collaborations that shape policy and funding decisions?
I think one of the things as an aide is just being appreciated. I actually, last month, was in a conversation. There was a bunch of stakeholders, a member, and the aide. And I was the only one who was like smiling at the aide, and she came up to me and she's like, thank you so much for just acknowledging me. And so having just even those little, you know, acknowledgements is huge. But, you know, asking for something, you know, today is March 14th. There's a deadline for amendments today for the House. I'm not going to reach out to my member today and be like, hi, I need this amendment and I need this now. That's not going to be realistic. That's not going to be helpful. And it's just not going to be anything that's going to be productive. And so having those moments and kind of really setting the schedule of the legislature of, hey, this is a downtime. This might be a great time for A to have a call just to get to know you, Chai. With the state house, we don't have district offices. And so for Representative Geralds, it is easy for his aide, his staff to kind of go out and meet people in the district. However, somebody who's in a Youngstown or Toledo or any four corners of the state, that's going to be really difficult for A, you to come to the state house. That can be a 3-hour drive, and that can be really, some prevention specialists just don't have that capacity. And so, you know, setting up those Zooms, just setting up that rapport of, hi, this is who we are, as well as inviting, you know, members to coalition meetings, any sort of events. As well as, again, we are prevention coalitions, we have our sectors. And if they're at the Chamber of Commerce events, typically your legislators are going to go to your county Chamber of Commerce events. And so, you know, having the opportunity to, you know, hi, nice to see you again, just having those relationships, those conversations without any asks and just establishing yourself, I think is really important. And so just having those district as well as those state house communications, I think is really, really vital. So too, again, when you need those asks, you're not asking at the wrong time.
Thanks, Maggie. So we've built the relationship, we've positioned ourselves as a credible voice, and we continue to be resources for our representatives in office. Representative Geralds, how do we translate those connections into real tangible initiatives, policies, and funding opportunities that support prevention efforts?
Ooh, that's a big one. What I will say is, so you built the relationships, you know what to say to the member, and now it's just engage. You know, prevention leaders know what is best. You are the experts. And what I would tell you or to anyone who is watching or reading this or listening to this is that you have to come into those offices with solutions. And, you know, one of the most powerful questions I ask is, what's the cost of doing nothing? And it's not, that question is not just a question of like, you know, if we don't fund prevention strategies, what happens in communities or what happens to people? But what's the economic impact, right? What does it mean when we don't invest in credible evidence-based prevention strategies that change communities? What happens to the people of those communities? And you need to talk about the economic impact, that we may see more of our Ohioans in prison. We may see more Ohioans homeless. We may see more Ohioans, you know, navigating substance use disorder or you know, some mental health crisis without hospitalization. You know, like, how do we actually get to the root causes of issues? And as experts, you know, you are coming into those rooms with the solutions that members should be listening to. And so I would leverage your expertise, leverage your relationships, you know, and go in and say that I'm not here just to talk to you about a problem. I'm here to present a solution that you can help carry, that we can help you carry together, right? And here's the thing, right? During the committee process, your voice can be a part of the table again, right? Every time we introduce a bill, we have proponent and opponent testimony. Individuals from those various prevention organizations can come and provide testimony in person or even in writing about the power of those bills or why it's necessary to fund these programs and what how it will ultimately make a difference. And so your voice is not just a part of the initial meeting with the member or the interested party meetings that you will have with that member, but it's also a part of the committee process so that your voice can be on record as to why these important investments and bills should be passed so that it will impact that, because it will impact people for the better across Ohio. And so we're in this for the long haul, right? We are partners. And I think if you think about it like that, as an advocate, and you know that you are on a journey with me or with the legislator, if you know that this is something that, you know, your expertise is going to be needed. And so leverage that expertise, leverage your voice in these moments and use your voice to really craft sound policy and investments that are going to make a difference.
Thank you so much, Representative Geralds. And I just have this little piggyback question. So what do you believe are some emerging areas of prevention that have the potential for significant impact, not only just in your district, but in Ohio?
So there's this primordial prevention strategies. Like, you know, this is what we think about when we are looking at, you know, birth to 10, right? Like, what are the things that we should be thinking about in our communities that are going to reduce the chances of a child getting sick or reduce the chance of a child coming in contact with things that may very well be harmful to them? And, you know, a lot of the work that I do in the State House is about changing the economic and environmental environments of people for the better. And so one of the things that I'm really big on is, and I think most folks, you may or may not know, I'm a lead poison survivor. And so Ohio is one of the worst, y'all, states in the country with lead service lines. And why is this all important? Every time you are drinking out of your faucet, you could very well be drinking lead-tainted water, because about 750,000 lead service lines still exist in Ohio. Why does that matter? Well, lead poisoning oftentimes leads to cognitive decline in young people. It leads to issues with bone density. It leads to issues with cardiovascular disease. It leads to issues related to lung disease. And lead, there's no safe level of lead that should exist in your body. So if a child has lead poisoning and they're drinking it or getting it from tainted tap water, then what ultimately happens without proper care and support in these communities, these kids are going to be less likely to learn in school, more likely to have aggressive behavior, more likely to come in contact with the justice system, and more likely to put themselves in a position where they're not going to be effective and optimal members of our communities, all because of poison in our water and nothing else. And so prevention for me is removing the lead service lines, right? Because if we remove the lead service lines, then we will prevent children from having that poison get into their body and then leading to that cognitive decline. And so that's a prevention strategy to me, right? Removing lead service lines, helping families have clean drinking water that will lead to healthier communities, healthier neighborhoods, healthier kids. That's the type of work that I do in the State House, right? And I feel like that is a form of prevention, because ultimately what we're doing is we're creating healthy environments so that we won't deal with the consequence of unhealthy environment on the back end using dollars that could be used and invested in elsewhere.
Thank you so much, Representative Geralds. And when I have listened to you speak today, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've noticed a pattern. You always say, here's the situation. So why does that matter? Here are the consequences. And here's a potential solution. And here's how it impacts Ohioans. And that pattern has kind of rung true and stayed steady through our entire conversation. And I found that just really helpful for me as a person who's framing issues. So Maggie, what can preventionists learn from, you know, framing an issue in a way that supports their legislators or even their local county commissioners or their mayors, et cetera, into understanding prevention and understanding why it's important and understanding, you know, what are those next steps moving forward?
Absolutely. And so, shameless plug, we do provide a PAA. We actually have a legislative meeting planner. And so it actually goes over everything that we're talking about right now. And so, you know, you have that, A, who's the point person? Who's going to talk about what? What data do we want to use? What do we want, you know, as our, you know, our meat, you know, what issues do we want to focus on? And then what's the solution? What is the ask? And so having that, you know, planned out ahead of time for, you know, A, that state meeting, that commissioner meeting, even, you know, your school board, you know, this is not just big P, little P stuff that, you know, this translates to, you know, having that organization and having, you know, that connection. You know, we can talk about Kratom and, you know, the story that Representative Gerald just told about lead poisoning, unregulated Kratom we're seeing has lead in it. So having that personal touch to it, he knows what's going to happen if, you know, we are ingesting lead. That's not going to be a hard sell for him. And so, you know, having that also understanding of that research and that rapport and just understanding of what is an issue for them and how can we target, how can we shift our narrative to meet theirs. I think is so huge in that preparation. And again, having that relationship, having that just innate and understanding of a legislator and whoever you're trying to meet with is huge. And just preparing yourself for those questions that might come up. But just being prepared and just having all those ready to go, just set up, because you might have also questions that they, you know, those nitty gritty questions of, okay, we're going to take this to LSC. I know we've talked about LSC. They're going to have questions that we didn't think about. And having those responses ready to go, I think is huge. But really just sitting down and just having that plan of this is what we want. This is the data. This is the our stories. Because honestly, stories do matter too. You know, we want that personal touch. You know, we talk, I know, as preventionists, we talk about scare tactics being bad. In the legislature, sometimes scare tactics are good. You know, you do want to say those. You know, we talk about people who are in recovery. We don't really necessarily want them talking to youth because it might say, oh, at this age, they turned their life around. I'm going to stop at this age. You know, having those personal stories of why, you know, prevention specialists and prevention intervention would have stopped me from going down this path of the hardships, economic turmoil, as well as just trauma, is really important to have too. And so, you know, don't, again, you don't want that, here's my story, this is the most important thing. You need to drop everything. That's not going to be effective. But this is my story. If we don't stop this, this is the outcome. It's huge. And so I think it's you have to tailor your message in a way that's going to be received by whoever the audience is.
Well, thank you. And as we get close to wrapping up our conversation today, I think I have one more question for both of you is, what is one thing that each of you wish everyone understood about the state budget process? Representative Gerald?
There's a lot of things I wanted to say about that. What I would tell you is the state budget process is a reflection of our values as Ohioans. And there are things in the budget that I agree with. There are things in the budget I do not agree with. And every single day, it is up to all of us as Ohioans to speak up, speak out, speak in on the issues that impact people and how that budget should reflect the solutions and the will of the people. And so So it is a document of our values. And it is literally the biggest thing that we pass as a member of the Ohio General Assembly. And so I am encouraging everyone during this journey of the budget to use their voices. You matter. We need you. And at the end of the day, your voice is going to help us build the type of Ohio that we all deserve.
Thank you. Maggie, how about you?
I agree 100% with everything Representative Gerald says. Again, the budget is like a moral compass. It's where, you know, a majority of the state sees, hey, this is where we need to go funds. And just because something gets into the budget, that doesn't mean that a yes or no vote means that they actually support it, because there are thousands and thousands of pages in this budget. And legislators can't be like, you know, I like this, I like this. The only person who can really do that at the end of the budget cycle is Governor DeWine. And, you know, they can advocate till they're blue in the gills about something that they want in or they have an issue with. And they could still possibly vote yes on the bill, just because it's such a vast, vast bill. One thing I will also say is voices matter, and the layer of voices and, you know, sectors, but even coming from youth, I think is a huge, huge plus sign. If you start making an issue out of something and it's a constant, hey, we're having meetings, we're testifying on this, it gets noticed. One example from when I was working in the legislature, there was a foster care ombudsman amendment that really became prevalent, and a conversation starter was because people were coming in. If you would have talked about that at the beginning of the process, nobody would have even thought about it. Because there was advocacy around it, it became such a hot topic issue that, you know, it didn't get into the budget, but there were conversations, a bipartisan conversation of, okay, how do we fix this? How do we, you know, ensure that foster care children are getting the services they need and deserve, and how do we support them when they age out? And so that's something, again, I think we can really focus on, is how do we make our voice collectively heard, and not just with our representative, our senator, but through the whole General Assembly.
Absolutely. Well, this has been an incredibly insightful conversation, and we are so grateful to you both, Representative Gerald and Maggie, for sharing your expertise and experience with us. As we wrap up, we like to end with a quick lighthearted segment. So today will be This or That, Advocacy Edition. So just choose the option that resonates most with you. No explanations needed. So the first is grassroots, so mobilizing local community members, or grass tops, engaging with individuals who hold positions of influence in the community. Grassroots or grass tops? Maggie?
Grassroots.
Representative Gerald?
Grassroots.
Data or storytelling? Representative Gerald?
Storytelling.
Maggie?
Storytelling.
And finally, this is the question we ask every one of our guests. You're reaching into that candy dish. It's full of M&Ms. Are you looking for a plain or peanut? Representative Gerald?
Definitely plain.
Maggie?
Peanut.
Well, thank you both for playing along. And our guests today have a passion and focus for state-level policy and public service. I encourage our listeners to remember that many of the themes you heard today can be applied to building relationships with federal and local policy decision makers as well. Thank you once again to Representative Gerald and Maggie Luteris for sharing their time and thoughts with us today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for this episode of Prioritizing Prevention. We hope you've gained valuable insights into effective advocacy or championing and how to engage with your elected officials. Remember, your voice matters in shaping prevention policy. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating, sharing it with others, posting it on social media, or setting the podcast to automatically download on your favorite channel. Doing so helps us reach more listeners and keeps the conversation going. To catch all the latest from the Center, follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook at OH Prevention COE, or visit us at preventioncoe.ohio.gov to sign up for our monthly newsletter. If you missed our last podcast, I spoke with Lauren Davis, Behavioral Health and Wellness Coordinator at the Greater Cincinnati Behavioral Health Services. During our conversation, we identified practical strategies to build and nurture relationships with schools, school districts, and educators to support educators in implementing evidence-based prevention strategies in schools. This podcast was produced by Ivory Lloyd at Global Insight Productions and is supported by Jen Morrell and Zeyu Zheng at the Ohio Center of Excellence for Behavioral Health Prevention and Promotion. Thank you to all three of those amazing people for helping us get prevention content out in the world.
This has been the Prioritizing Prevention Podcast. For more episodes, you can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Google Play, Apple Music, and many more. This program is funded by the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. For more information about us, please visit preventioncoe.ohio.gov. Thank you for listening.